heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, DJ Foster. I am joined today by Jordan Heimer, who is coming to me live from a parking lot. Is that correct, Jordan?
Yeah, but a parking lot near the Staples Center, where I did just watch a live basketball game. I'm coming live from my crib.
How much did you have to drop on parking? Because that was always my big issue with going to games.
Zero. I'm an extremely frugal parker.
Zero?
Downtown LA is the parking mecca, as long as you don't mind parking next to a tent city.
Wow. I don't think I've ever parked anywhere in LA for zero.
Yeah, you just have to get like 8-10 blocks away from Staples Center, and to walk can be a little harrowing. Danger's my middle name.
It sure is. Jordan Dangerheimer. Thanks for coming on. So you went to the home opener. Saw the Clippers win handily over the Jazz. A lot of people have been talking up the Jazz this year as this 50-win team. Obviously, they're not at full strength. They don't have Gordon Hayward. But what did you think? Was this more about the Clippers being on point, or were the Jazz just not up to snuff here?
I think the Clippers definitely deserve a lot of credit. You know, these 12:30 or 1:30 Sunday matinee games are notoriously sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird time for players to play. Plus, just we're being honest, last night was Halloween party night in Los Angeles, and I have to think that affected at least some of the guys. And the first half was really sloppy. I'd say the first three quarters of the first half, the best two players on the court for either team were Rodney Hood and George Hill. And Chris was unusually sloppy, and Blake was missing shots. But I think the Clippers deserve a lot of credit for kind of staying with the game through all that offensive inefficiency and kind of haplessness. And, you know, things really started to turn right towards the end of the first half with a great 2 or 3 minute sequence from DeAndre, who just kind of made things happen, you know, grabbed a few offensive rebounds and kind of changed the tenor of the game going into the second half. And then the Clippers woke up, and Austin Rivers came off the bench, and most states took four charges, which...
Four?
That's unusual.
I know.
Four charges I counted.
My favorite part was after he took the fourth charge, he held up four fingers to let everyone know that that was his fourth charge that he drew.
Well, look, he's got to do that, right? That's not a stat that appears on the usual box score. So you got to kind of help people keep score at home.
Which is silly, because a charge is so much better than a block, because you get the ball 100% of the time, where a block, you get it about, I think the last that I read, it's about 58% of the time on a block shot, you recover it, and you get a foul added to the team foul bonus, and a personal foul. So it's like, it's probably the best defensive play in basketball, and yet it's rarely tracked. But I think I think he took a couple in the Portland game, too, if I remember correctly. He may be leading the league in charges taken now.
You know, he did. And listen, I know we're kind of kidding, because most states, he's not known for his defensive prowess. But if he is one of those savvy veterans who kind of understands the positioning and, frankly, some of the baloney of the charge rule, where you can kind of put yourself right in front of a guy who's driving and kicking,
yep,
and just let him crash into you after he passes the ball, that's a huge advantage to a kind of immobile defensive player. If you can grab one or two of those a game, that's two turnovers, it's two possessions. That's got a huge cumulative effect.
Right. He can't move laterally, but he's doing a great job of just kind of soaking up space and, like you said, just throwing himself in front of people. This was a game where the Clippers bench, once again, that all-bench lineup dominated. Is this like a small sample size, you think, or can we really start getting excited about this five-man bench unit and what they can do?
I think what we can get excited about legitimately is that you do have a bench unit where there are just so many scoring options.
Yeah, agreed.
And, you know, you're going to see different guys take over in different games, and certainly you're going to have games where everyone's cold. But in the Portland game, it was more Mo State. In this game, it was Jamal Crawford and then Austin Rivers.
Yeah.
And there's going to be games where West hits all the threes out of the corner that he's been missing so far. And even Raymond Felton's looking a little feisty. And I just think having a feisty bench is a new thing for this team. You know, even going back to the Rockets disaster of 2 years ago, it always kind of bugs me when I hear Clipper fans talk about how that was an inexplicable collapse. Because the forgotten factor is the team had no bench.
Right.
The starters were worn out. Blake Griffin talked about how he'd never felt more tired after a season. And just the fact that this team has a bench that can sustain leads, build leads, close out games, that's so new, and it's going to have such a big effect, you know, kind of a net effect, not only game to game, but in terms of what it means for the starters and the rest that they'll be able to get.
Yeah, and look, like you said, the way that they're scoring, all the different scoring options that they have, Austin Rivers isn't going to have a whole lot of nights like this, where he's 8 for 11 and just killing it, but when he gets hot, and we know how Jamal plays when he gets hot, it's one of those things where they're both kind of the kind of guys that are really tough to guard, even the best defense, because they take such high degree of difficulty shots. You know, they're going to get their buckets. So offensively, yeah, I'm pretty excited for the bench. It's not very often that you see one starter in double figures and think, okay, this game was an easy domination by the team with one starter in double figures, but that was the Clippers tonight. Blake Griffin had 18. No other starter had double figures, and this game was such a blowout that Diamond Stone got his first NBA action.
I'm curious, DJ. The offense is obviously the easier thing to talk about, and Austin Rivers had such a kind of explosive game.
Yeah.
The Jazz are missing some of their offensive options.
Yes.
But they essentially, if you don't count kind of the last couple minutes where an all-bench unit scored some garbage points, Clippers held the Jazz under 80 points.
They
what
did.
Are you seeing in the defense so far in these first couple games?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think they've just been, DeAndre has been really solid. I thought he played incredibly well tonight, and I love that the Clippers were getting him the ball early on offense. I know you asked me to talk about defense, but I feel like with DeAndre, if you get him involved on offense, he becomes an even better defender. And honestly, and this is probably a little weird for people to hear, Blake Griffin is defending his butt off right now. Hustle plays, boxing out, being in the right position, closing out, switching on the guys. I mean, he's doing everything at full speed and doesn't look like he's conserving energy like he did in past years.
Agreed, although a small counter to that is, in the third quarter, he was gassed.
Yeah.
There were a couple plays where he would grab a rebound, throw the outlet pass, and basically have to walk up the court. Now look, if that's simply the other side of the coin to him hustling his butt off all the time on defense,
yeah, you take
it. You take that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But it was interesting to see anyway that maybe he's still working himself up into 32 or 34 minutes of, you know, regular season basketball shape.
Right. This could be a potential playoff matchup somewhere down the line. And I think it's a good sign that the Clippers came out, like you said, a Sunday game. These are often like lazy starts and guys kind of sleepwalk through the first three quarters. I think it's a good sign that the Clippers really locked down defensively. Coming out of the second half, they had a few possessions where you could tell they were just totally engaged and bought in and chased away a team that without Gordon Hayward doesn't really have the scoring chops to hang with him. They got him out of the game so they could rest towards the end. I think that's going to be huge for the Clippers just knowing, look, let's not coast. Let's really, you know, step on the gas and get teams out of the way. You know who the best in the league is at that?
Tell me.
San Antonio. San Antonio's been doing that for years, and everybody wonders why they're so good every single year. Their starters always had this sense of urgency to put teams in these big 15 to 20 point holes so they could rest in the fourth quarter. The Clippers are good enough to do that against a lot of teams. I don't know if they were good enough to do it against teams like Utah every night, but they can do it. When they play the Kings, when they play the Lakers, I mean, these Western Conference teams that are struggling, I think they can really put a hurting on them and then rest towards the end of the game.
I was interested by that because up 17 or 18, Doc actually put in the starters again with about 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, including JJ, DeAndre, and Chris. I was curious why he did that. I wondered if maybe he was trying to just get those guys some rhythm. You know, JJ has not had a quick start to the year.
He hasn't.
And I thought maybe, I wasn't able to stick around for Doc's post-game press conference, but I thought maybe he put JJ back in just to try to get him some easy looks and kind of get him going into the next game.
Right. It has been interesting watching JJ. His shot, you don't usually see JJ miss badly, but he's missed a couple shots now in this first game and the second game here, where he's missed pretty badly. I wonder if it's just a legs thing for him.
I don't know. I think at this point, though, what concerned me is it's not just something we're seeing. It's something that's showing up on the scouting report. You know, JJ had an unusually poor shooting preseason. And in the first half, one of the reasons I thought the Clippers were struggling to score is the Jazz weren't playing JJ the way teams usually play JJ.
Yeah.
At times, they would switch, and Joe Johnson would switch onto him, and then kind of play JJ almost with like a foot in the paint, where essentially the Jazz were choosing to clog up the lane and make it really hard for Blake and Chris to get penetration or for DJ to roll to the rim, and daring JJ Redick to shoot, which that's not a sentence I've ever said or thought before.
It's true. You know, I think the other side of it to JJ's struggles, maybe you have to look at his matchups these first two games. Against Portland, he had to chase around CJ McCollum, who's a handful to guard. Tonight, he had Rodney Hood, who effectively is Utah's top scorer. So he's had some tough matchups where he's had to kind of chase around these guards and play physical, and maybe it's just wearing him down a little bit early in the season.
You could be right. This is the first time that I've seen Rodney Hood up close. I've obviously watched him on TV a lot. So impressive.
Yeah.
He really has an ability to score kind of in a number of ways. Like, there was one point in the first half on successive possessions, you saw him overpower a guy by backing him down. On the very next possession, he went around someone and skied over someone. It's like, he can kind of do it all. He's more physical than I realized. Mm-hmm. He's more bouncier than I realized. He's really good.
He is really good. And he's a guy who can kind of slide into whatever role you need him to. Like, if you need him to be just a spot-up shooter, like, he's very capable with his feet set. He can do that. If you need him to go find a bucket or post up a smaller guard, he can do that. I mean, he's a really nice, flexible offensive player. I think the next step for him will be kind of becoming a little better in the pick and roll, but he's a really good wing. Utah, this isn't... Let's talk about Utah for a little bit. You don't think that this is all that worrisome, right? Because we're not getting a full look with Gordon Hayward. Boris Diaw is in an interesting sort of basketball shape right now. Are we getting a good look at Utah? Can we expect better performances going forward, you think?
Look, you're definitely right. Boris Diaw is in, I guess you could call it, French shape. It's croissants and wine.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know. You know, I know Utah obviously is a very chic pick in the preseason, and a lot of people have them competing for the three seed and winning 50 games. A lack of a go-to scoring option and a lack of playmakers are going to be problematic even when Gordon Hayward comes back.
Yeah.
As good as he is, like, this team does lack an offensive explosiveness, and they're going to be great defensively, and when Derek Favors kind of back into game shape and he loses this 20-minute limit, that's going to make a big difference, but I think they're going to struggle all year to score down the stretch in the half court. I don't really know how they get enough spacing to do that. And Dante Exum, to me, I'm not sure he's going to be a contributor this year. He may be in the rotation. He may kind of get his feet under him. But I was really struck by how easily the Clippers were able to manipulate Exum defensively. You know, Jamal, I always noticed, is so effective against young players.
Yeah.
Because, like, they haven't seen the repertoire yet. And they kind of don't know all the weird herky-jerky stuff he's going to do. And Jamal was just taking him to school.
Yeah, Jamal's really good at waiting for young guys to reach or to hand check to try and slow him down. And he goes directly into his shot as soon as that hand check comes. It's like one of those veteran things where you rarely see young guys come to the league and be able to do it. Jamal's just so good at drawing fouls anytime he feels any sort of contact whatsoever.
So we'll see, I guess. I mean, I think the upside argument is compelling, right? Trey Lyles is going to be better for the end of the year. Derek Favors is actually still a relatively young guy. Exum will be better. Hill will be more used to the system. But I have trouble seeing how the Jazz win a first-round series. You know, when you think about the top four or five teams in the West, I'm not sure which one the Jazz are better than. What do you think?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a really good point. I think Golden State, obviously no. San Antonio, Clippers. I can see Utah sliding in as the four seed pretty easily, and I think a Utah-Portland series would be very interesting, just a total clash of styles. I do think Utah, with their length defensively, could give Portland a lot of trouble. I think Utah can win a 4 or 5 series against Portland fairly easily. What do you think?
Well, that'd be a great series. And, you know, this is a talk that we've had over the years a lot. I like to consider myself someone who is analytically minded and not kind of overly compelled by a good narrative. But one thing that I've almost had to walk back as a basketball fan or observer over the last couple of years is I've come around, like back around, on the idea that one great playmaker or scorer is the difference maker in a playoff series. And I think if you were asking me to handicap that series, I'd go with Damian Lillard. He's emerged as a true top 10 danger on offense in this league. And I just think that swings games in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a guy who can create for himself and for others a little bit, and yeah, I think the stuff with Utah and how they don't have a clutch score, sometimes it can be overblown a lot in the regular season, but yeah, once it comes to the postseason, and there's 5 minutes left in a tight game, and you gotta just manufacture buckets however you can, you kind of need that guy who can always get his own shot, and Gordon Hayward's a great player, but that's not him, right?
It's not him, although, countering everything I just said, I'm really interested in watching George Hill play with Gordon Hayward a little bit, because, boy, George Hill is such a good basketball player.
They're going to be so long and just, they're just going to shrink the court so much. That's one thing I noticed with the Clippers tonight. The starters didn't play all that well offensively. Clippers only shot 41% from the field. Utah, they just shrink the floor with their length because of all that wingspan. Any spacing that you would normally have in pick and rolls is just kind of sapped up by all that length.
That's true, and exactly what you said about Rodney Hood really applies to their entire backcourt once they have it all back and healthy. Rodney Hood and George Hill and Gordon Hayward, they're all guys who can do several things and do them well. They can spot up, they can create, they can run pick and roll, they can be either side of the pick and roll. And so watching those three guys get used to each other, I think will be interesting. Quinn Snyder's a really good coach. And I think you'll see a lot of kind of screens and rescreens where you're putting different guys into defensively tricky positions. And now I'm talking myself into the Jazz now. I think by the end of the season, you will see a team that understands how to kind of manufacture good possessions, even without an elite offensive player.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. MVP for tonight's game, are we giving it to Austin?
You got to give it to Baby Rivers tonight.
Rivers.
Look, it's not always going to be like that, but he is a true streak scorer, and he's a guy who feels it. When he has the hot hand, he's going to take those shots. And honestly, if you can get 15 games like that out of Austin Rivers this season, then he was well worth the re-sign.
The billions of dollars they paid him.
The billions and billions of nepotistic dollars.
It's my favorite kind of money. All right, so we got some Twitter questions that poured in here. Let's get to a few of those, and then we'll wrap up here. From our old friend, Dylan Rice Leary, if the Clippers are heels now, motion to anoint the new and improved bench the henchman, at least till a better moniker arises. How do you feel about the henchman as the new bench nickname? Should it almost
I'm
be the benchman? Is that
I'm
bad?
I'm glad that he gave us the disclaimer that a better nickname could arise. Like, that's fine. It's a solid 7.5, but it's no bench mob.
Yeah. Or Tribe Called Bench was great.
Ooh, I like Tribe Called Bench. I think that was a Dan Wojcicki special.
A Tribe Called Bench. I think that's my favorite one. We're going to work on it. You're good at these kind of things.
But it's good to hear from Dylan.
It is good to hear from Dylan. I think Dylan has another question, too, we're going to get to in a second. Imran Q asks, notice JJ is wearing compression tights now. Any leg issues or just a comfort style thing? We're not sure. We can find out about that. And on a future episode, we'll dig deep on the compression tights. But it is interesting, JJ, if that's a switch for him. He has been short on some shots. Like we said, the jumper isn't falling right, so maybe, I don't know, maybe he's feeling a little discomfort in his legs. I don't know, we'll look into it. Despite the cost of living, why, DJ, does... Wait, what? I don't get that question, sorry. Continuing. How is a bench unit featuring Spates and Crawford playing good defense? Jordan, I'm going to let you handle that one.
Well, look, taking four charges obviously helps, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you
for
just,
sure.
How many possessions is the defense out there for? 15, 20? You just turn four of them to turnovers. That's not going to happen every night. And Jamal is still such a liability on defense. There were a bunch of plays where I could kind of watch the play live and then look at the monitor next to me and watch the play, you know, 7-8 seconds delay. And teams run this special kind of staggered screen for Jamal, I think, where you screen him off the ball, and then you have your big man kind of come up almost to the top of the arc so that as Jamal tries to run through and recover,
mm-hmm.
you just put some space in front of him or put a body in front of him. Jamal doesn't even try to get around that second screen. I mean, play after play, Jamal just kind of runs into that guy and just stops and sees what happens. And the Jazz missed some of those open threes tonight. They made some, too. Both those Joe Inglis threes were off that exact kind of stagger screen play. Look, I'll never stop complaining about Jamal's defense.
No matter how much the Clippers win by, we will always find complaints about Jamal's defense.
It's so true. They can go 82-0, and I'll still sit here and tell you about the three screens that he absolutely died on after the game.
You know what, though? It is interesting that he's not even bothering to die on the screens anymore. That's how much he's died on screens over his career, that he has chosen to not even try to die on them anymore.
And listen, honestly, that's wiser. If you're going to like go through a whole big floppy thing where you end up on the ground and now you can't grab a rebound or get out quickly on the break, I'd rather you just stand there and see what happens to the play, and you're that much closer to being effective on offense.
Yep. Even with the issues, I think Jamal was definitely in like the plus category tonight. If you're weighing his offense versus
sure.
defense, yeah, I mean, he was great getting into the paint against a defense that's really tough around the rim, shooting those little floaters, and yeah. That's just, defense is just not Jamal's thing. Next question, thoughts on the bench, how do they manage the hot hand, what differences do you see in their defense, when are we going to see Brandon Bass?
It's a great question about Brandon Bass. I think one of the reasons that Doc picks up guys like Brandon Bass, I mean, obviously everyone has joked about how much Doc loves signing guys who he's played for before,
mm-hmm.
but I think a guy like Brandon Bass, you know, Doc has spoken in the preseason about how he's not going to necessarily have a consistent rotational role right away, but he's a guy who's a veteran, and all those cliches like professional Willie Green from a few years ago. He's going to be ready when the time comes. You will end up seeing him against bigger teams. I know the Jazz are a bigger team, but Favors obviously only played, I think, 18 minutes tonight. And I think he'll be ready to go when the time comes. He was good in the preseason.
Yeah, that's the nice part about having a veteran who knows what he's capable of doing, is that he doesn't necessarily need these minutes. So you can kind of throw him in whenever the situation arises and trust that he's going to be ready to play. Brandon Bass is a guy who he could not play for a couple weeks. You can put him in, you know exactly what you're going to get from him.
Yeah, exactly.
How scared, overcome by waves of Clipperdom, oh no, we're screwed again, were you when DJ got hurt tonight? I was freaking out. I actually tweeted, oh God, oh God, oh God, when DeAndre hurt his hand. I thought it was going to be like a broken thumb type situation. He ended up returning. Doesn't seem like it's a big deal. Were you freaking out about curses and this is it? This is the end of an era?
Not really, because one of the advantages of being at the game is that you can see if a guy doesn't go back to the locker room. So the fact that the trainers were just working on DJ on the bench, and that kind of, you can see body language, right? Like, the people around DJ and the trainers were continuing to talk to each other and joke around. And if you compare that to, say, just use the most dramatic example, the look and the body language in Portland last year when Chris broke his hand and was done for the season, you know. You just have a sense of, this isn't a disaster. No one's treating it like a disaster. Maybe it's a sprained finger, whatever, but no, I really had that advantage and didn't think this was going to be anything too traumatic.
Yeah, that's way too level-headed, because even when he was on the bench, I was like, Jason Powell, you stay away from him. He's fine. Go away. Why are they talking so much? Look at his face. He looks like he's in so much pain. I'm ready to freak out at any potential injury. Just for the record. This is like with Blake Griffin and Chris Paul's free agency, any major injury to any of those three would spell kind of disaster, at least if it impacted what they could do in the playoffs. So yeah, I'm gonna freak out anytime any of them look slightly hurt.
That's good. Look, hysteria is always helpful.
Yeah. You can count on me to not be calm in any situation that requires it. That was it for Twitter questions. Jordan, thanks for joining us on the show. Anything you want to wrap up? Any hot takes from the game today?
No hot takes. I don't think you could have asked for a better start to the season, honestly, where you got to see the Swiss Army Knife in action. You had all these different guys contribute. And if your biggest worry after two games is that J.J. Redick is having trouble with his shot,
yeah,
that's a great worry to have. Yep. J.J. Redick is going to find the shot. He's one of the greatest shooters in the history of the league. And kind of everything else is humming along nicely.
Yep, definitely. Agreed. We're in a good spot. Our Blake Griffin MVP prediction is in decent shape as long as Russell Westbrook settles down. And my new prediction after two games of Mo Spates as the Defensive Player of the Year is looking real good.
Oh, yeah. You know, you can still get actually pretty good odds on that.
I'd imagine so. Thanks, Jordan. We will talk with you soon. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Locked On Clippers podcast. If you have questions for the show, comments, whatever it may be, you can email me at fosterdj3@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter at FoxSportsFoster. Make sure you like, rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy your day.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.